This is Legends of 84, the story of BYU's remarkable national championship football team, told by the men who changed the world of college football and were forever transformed by that unforgettable season.
We knew we were going to be good. How good? Nobody knows.
I just never thought we'd lose. And each game that we won, we got more and more confident.
But once we played next to each other, we protected one another.
If you're not willing to prepare, then you're not going to be ready to win.
We are a peculiar people. We need to embrace that.
Brigham Young University has won the Holiday Bowl 24-17, and the Cougars are the only undefeated team in the nation. And I think they'll be number one.
Skydivers coming into Jack Murphy Stadium. A record crowd tonight of 62,100. It's the record for Jack Murphy Stadium as you get a look at Glenn E. Bo Schembechler, the head football coach for the Wolverines of Michigan. For Lavelle Edwards Cougars, they are 12-0 on the season, a record of 23 consecutive victories. The last time they lost was in the opening game of the 1983 season when they lost to Baylor. Since that time, they have won 23.
So heading into the Holiday Bowl, we are 12-0. We are the talk of every talk radio show. You name it, we're talking about it. This is Robbie Bosco, quarterback. Media is crazy down in San Diego. By the way, we love the Holiday Bowl. We love Jack Murphy Stadium. We feel like that's a home away from home. We have a lot of fans that live in San Diego, so we knew it was going to be a home field advantage for us. But we were super excited.
Since that time, they have won 23 in a row.
184-pounder, so the explosive offense of the Cougars of BYU come out of the field. Led by number six.
Prior to that game, we tried to get a 1-versus-2 matchup. We were contracted to play in the Holiday Bowl. So they just tried to get the best team they could against us. They picked Michigan. But prior to picking Michigan, we wanted a 1-versus-2 matchup. So either, I think it was us versus Oklahoma or us versus Washington. And probably because of money and the amount of money you got from going to a certain bowl game, they didn't want to play us. They decided they're going to play each other in the Orange Bowl, thinking they're going to pick the winner of our game for sure over BYU playing a 6-6 Michigan game. So that's the conversation all week we're down there.
Robbie Bosco knows he can stop the clock. It's only going to be second down and 10. You don't take the sack. You don't throw the interception. You don't throw the ball in the middle in the giveaway. Not in this part of the field. Bosco did the smart thing.
We don't care who we play. If you look at it, early in the year, they beat Miami. And Miami was ranked in the top 5. Michigan started getting injuries. Jim Harbaugh was their quarterback. Didn't play in our game against Michigan. Everybody else on that team was playing in that game. So this wasn't the 6-5 or 6-6 Michigan team that everybody's complaining about. This pretty much is a team that beat Miami early in the season. And they have some talent. And they're good. We went into that game knowing that, look it, we got to play.
Bosco is hurt on the play. And if they lose Robbie Bosco, they're in severe trouble, to say the least.
It was the first quarter. We were in our own territory. I threw an out to Cause. Coming around the end, away from where I was throwing, was their defensive end. He came down and hit me low, and my cleat got stuck in the ground, and he hit me and kept rolling on it.
Robbie Bosco, he's got an injured ankle. Hurt on the last play, the previous play, and testing whether or not he can stand on both feet.
As I'm laying there, I'm just like, hey, just get up. Try to get up. I can't get up. I couldn't put any pressure on my leg, and so I felt the pain and the throbbing in my ankle and in my knee. I'm like, come on, get up, get up. So I can't do that, so I go back down. I'm like, look, maybe I need a little bit of a break. I'm going to go down. I'm going to miss a play or two maybe. Get back in there. So they come over there. The doctors, trainers, whoever's out there are working on my leg. They're moving it around. I'm like, yeah, that hurts. That hurts. So they carry me off the field. I go, let's get in the locker room and let's get a better diagnosis of what this is and what's going on. So Jack Murphy Stadium, we go off to the left through the end zone. And then you have to go up a long tunnel, and then you have to go around the corner, and the locker room's right there. They lay me on the table. They're like, first thing, you had a high ankle sprain. And then you got some ligament damage in your knee. We can't move it this way or that way without you not being able to do it. They're going back and forth. We have kind of a tunnel of people, and I'm just yelling, what's happening? What's happening in the game? Who's got the ball? And they're all saying, nothing's really happening. Plays are going on, but nothing big is happening. So I'm like, okay, what's the deal? They're kind of talking still. I go, okay, answer this question. If I go back out and play, will that do any more damage to my career? Can I get hurt any worse? That's going to be like, dude, you should have never played because that something like that happened again and it made it worse. And they're like, no. So I said, okay, let's tape it up and let's go. Tape it as tight as you can do it, and then let's go do it. So they do that. So I get off the table. I'm walking down the long tunnel, and there's my dad. How my dad got on the field and made it even that far, who knows? It could have been anywhere crazy. I don't know if he talked to anybody or what. He made it to the tunnel, and he goes to me, how you doing? And I said, I think I'm okay. And my dad just says, just do the best you can. Every game, just do the best you can. So when I told him, I think I'm doing okay, he said, just do the best you can. I walked out there and the roar of the fans was huge. And I'm just like, I love our fans. I get over to the sidelines. I'm warming up. I'm like, I don't know if I can do it. My arm's fine. Everything's good. But the dropping back, I'm trying to do some drop backs. Hard to plant, hard to drop back. And I just start shaking my head like, I don't know. I don't know if I can go back in there. So the trainer comes over on the table. So they take my ankle. Oh, they put even, I don't know if you could take my leg any harder than you did. They taped it up even tighter. Do you want something? Do you want a shot? And I'm like, no, I don't want anything. I'm going to go try to play. Because I had my mindset, I don't want anything. I didn't want a foggy head to attempt anything. So I went out. I went up to Mike Holmgren, who is the one that was getting the plays from Norm Chow down. And he looked at me like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm going to play. He goes, no. Are you sure? I go, I am going. And I just went out there. Blaine was out there. I waved him out. We gave each other a high five. Got into the huddle. I'm like, okay, boys, here you go. We're ready. And I could see in each of their eyes, let's go. So I go, we're going to do something different. We have a pass play. We're going to go in the shotgun. So you got to listen. So Trevor, I'm going to be back there about 5 or 6 yards. Let's go. Let's do it.
Bosco out of a shotgun.
Oh, no.
And he's going to run in that bad knee and bad ankle. Well, you got to like this kid's guts. You have to.
First play, I drop back the pass, and they're bringing everybody. And boom, down low, getting hit. And I hardly ever got on my offensive line. I was saying, dudes, we got to be better. I love you guys, but I can't do it. I can't stand back here and getting shots and stuff like that. Other than me running the ball, I do not think they touched me the rest of the game. Still love that offensive line more than anything in the world.
You know, Howard, the big problem now is with Robbie Bosco. He's got a slight knee injury. He also has a sprained ankle. That drive took an awful lot of time. He had to sit down there for the better part of a half an hour getting cold.
I was able to drop back, make some throws. It was more of the side angle stuff that kind of bothered my ankle and my knee more. So along with the adrenaline, I was able to run the ball and make plays. And then when that play was over, I'd be like, help me up off the ground. And then the adrenaline would pick up and just able to make certain plays. We got down in the end zone. We were going to take a big lead in the game. We were about the 2 or 3 yard line. I did a fake handoff, rolled out, which we've done multiple times. I don't see anybody open, so I'm gonna take it to the end zone myself. Ball comes out of my hands, ball's in the end zone, big pile up, Michigan recovers. turnover. They go right down to score. So instead of being ahead by two touchdowns, now the game's tight the rest of the game.
So we call a grade one medial collateral ligament tear on the inside of his knee, a grade two ankle sprain. It's very puffy. We didn't have time for an x-ray. I doubt whether there's a fracture, but he's playing a lot of pain. Plus, he has a fractured rib, I'm sure, on the left side.
Can he return?
Well, he says it's not to be a hero, but he says he can still move around, and he says it's his ball game to play. I don't think it's going to be any permanent damage, or we wouldn't let him play. But I think he's just playing with tremendous pain. I've got to hand it to him.
Biggest game of our lives. I am not missing this game. We all played hurt throughout the year. Every single one of us played hurt. I'm not missing this game. Halftime, from my recollection, was like any other halftime. We got with our offense. Offensive line got with the coaches. Lavelle gave a little speech at the end, and then we just went back out. So here we are in the fourth quarter of the game. We're down by 7 points, and the season's on the line. Honestly, a thought process is, look, if we don't win this game, we're a one-loss team, like multiple BYU teams are. So we want to do something different. We want to be set apart from all the other great teams. And the only way we can do it is win this game.
Bosco guns it into number 12, David Mills. Now you know why David Mills averages 17 yards per reception as a tight end.
So at this time, we've had 6 turnovers. They've had 1. We have a lot more yards than they do. Things really aren't going our way. We've had some tip ball interceptions. It's just not going our way. I think at this time, early in the fourth quarter, we had, I think, about 9 to 10 penalties, and they've had very few. But we still feel pretty confident. So we know we got to go down and score. And I think early in the fourth quarter, we did a pretty good drive. I got flushed out of the pocket a little bit. And I always get kind of teased about this, but as I rolled out, I saw Glenn Kozlowski coming across the back of the end zone, and I knew I couldn't throw a ball straight at him. I couldn't bullet it in there. I had to get it up high because there were defenders in front, but like I said before, you've got to make a decision and make a play. He probably wasn't the most wide open guy, so I tried to throw it higher. I wanted to throw a little more zip on it, but it came out of my hand because I was rolling out to the right. Came out of my hand, so it was a little bit of a duck up there. And Kaz went up, and he had a defender in front of him, went up and made a spectacular catch over the defender. And he kept his feet in bounds. Officials, touchdown.
Bosco looking, chased.
There's Kaz.
It's
Lassie.
A touchdown.
All you had to do is mention his name, Howard.
Glenn Kozlowski makes the reception in the back of the end zone.
Watch Robbie Bosco throw this ball. He doesn't fire it. He loops it up in the air. Kozlowski is going to get in the back of the end zone.
Now the game's tied. So we're like, here we go. The defense held Michigan to barely over 200 yards of total offense. Our defense was so good.
They're getting within Bergeron's field goal range. Ball at the 34-yard line.
Look out.
That takes him out of field goal range across the 50. Leon White. And Kurt Govea. Govea was the man that made the sack.
So now we're like, okay, we get the ball back. Now it's later in the game. This is do or die. The good news is we only need a field goal, because the game's tied right now. It's tied 17-17. So as we're driving, making some big plays, they're bringing guys left and right. In the back of my mind, I'm like, do we want to leave this up to our field goal kicker to win this for us? Now, Lee Johnson's one of the all-time great kickers in BYU history. And there's no doubt in my mind he would have made it. But if we can score, let's score a touchdown.
And so now the Cougars come to the line, the 17-yard line, with the whole season riding on this one drive. It would appear to be that way.
We're getting the ball down there closer, closer, closer. So we have a play. It's called Red Right 69H option. And so what that does, it gives the receiver on the left, he does a streak, the halfback, who they haven't been covering, Kelly Smith, he goes out. If it's a man-to-man, he's going to make a move, get open with the guy he's covering. If it's zone, He's going to get in between two linebackers, and I'm going to throw it to him right away. We're on about the 13-yard line at this time in their territory, going in to score. And we're about three, I think to be exact, left on the clock. So these things are do or die. And then we have on the other side, I have my tight end that's going to come across the middle and a post backside. So I drop back to pass. Kelly Smith is releasing. He's running his route. He stops. And before I have a chance to possibly throw it to him or look who else is open, two of the inside defensive linemen come storming up the field. And they actually beat our offensive linemen. As soon as I saw that, I planted my foot and stepped up in between them. Both of them reached out and had their arm on my body, and I was able to make it through that. So now I have two of our offensive linemen right in front of me, and this happens split second. I have to determine if I say go, they're gonna be my lead blockers, and I'm gonna take it to wherever I can take it. Because if I throw it and they're past the line of scrimmage, penalty flag.
Third down and four, the ball at the 13-yard line. Penalty markers fly. It is thrown in the end zone for a touchdown, but there is a marker on the play. There is a marker on the play. Wendell Shelton has signaled touchdown. It is going to be a penalty against Michigan.
So I'm by the officials. Our guys out there, the receivers, everybody are piling on Kelly, yada, yada. So no one knows what's happening. Then penalty flag. We're like, oh, no, no. Don't do this to us. And then I can hear him say, I can't even remember the call. Offsides on Michigan, put my hands up, whatever, and we take the lead. Head by 7 points now. They get the ball, our defense, they have no chance to score. We pick it off, we had a couple runs, kill the clock out, and whew, it was off our shoulders like you couldn't believe. We did it.
I'll tell you what, this team has done a gut check of the first order tonight.
Yes, indeed.
And that young man in particular.
That's why they're number one, Howard.
They very well should be number one. That's the end of the ball game. Final score, Brigham Young 24, Michigan 17.
I remember right after I got interviewed by ESPN or whatever station was doing the game. Do you guys think you deserve to be number one? I go, look, we did everything that we had to do, that we have control of. Yeah, I do believe we're number one. And then the crazy thing is that game was like in the middle of December. The major bowl games aren't until January 1st, which 2 and 3 are playing. So I pack up my stuff, hop in the car with my mom and dad. We drive up to Roseville, which is probably another 10, 12 hour drive up there. It's great to be home for Christmas. We have no idea what's going on. People calling me for interviews. Bowl games all happened. We still don't know because people have to vote. So I can't remember what day it was. I'm still at home. I'm in bed sleeping. My dad comes in the room. You guys are number one. It was just exciting. Christmas ended. School started. Went back to campus. They had a big parade for us. One of the special things that we've ever done. As a team, we got to go up to Salt Lake City and have dinner with the first presidency and quorum of the 12 apostles, which is super awesome. Not very many people get an opportunity to experience. And so we all love being a part of that team. To have a head coach as Lavelle Edwards, to know the pressures of winning, to know the pressures of being successful, to keeping a job. Lavelle did all that. But the one thing, when I look at Lavelle Edwards, or when I think of my home away from home father figure that he was to me, and to have a head coach that honors his priesthood, that during his coaching time was a bishop, to have a dear wife that he has, of Patty Edwards, who would clip out every article and send a personal note to my mom and dad every week. You show me one other coach couple that does that or that will ever do that. The blessing that he gave me and the things that are most important to me, he was right. Our Heavenly Father knows us and knows what's best for us. I could live this day without that national championship, as long as I have my wife, my kids, my grandkids, my family. That's way more important than any football game I've ever participated in. The leadership and the role model that Lavelle was to me and my life, I can't thank him enough and his family enough for that.
BYU, it's a unique place like no other place on earth. We are a peculiar people, and we need to embrace that. It's a huge positive, and we can't get away from that ever. And I've seen the impact it had on the 80s when I was there, and even today, the impact of the BYU brand and the culture and what we as a university stands for is powerful, and it changes lives.
Lavelle always preached this: preparation is the key to success. Whatever you're doing, regardless of what it is, if you prepare, you're going to be ready and you'll be successful.
We couldn't have done it without, I think there was 105 of us at the time, and we all had to pull together to get that done.
I think I'd talked to everyone on that 1984 team at some point. One thing was always in common. Man, we loved each other. We loved each other.
The magic of BYU lives on today inside of my family. There's nothing like the legacy of being a member of the 1984 BYU football team. It's transformed my life. Here I am, a 62-year-old man, and it's still at the very center of everything that we do in our life. When you think about the lasting legacy that I think you want from BYU, I think it's going to come down to my five kids, and I hope at that time maybe 25 grandchildren. If all of those people can still have their lives centered in the gospel, be active members of the church, and good people that contribute to society and love their neighbors, then I think that would be what I would define as success.
I think Lavelle did a tremendous job of keeping all the things in perspective, and the players. I think that's the kind of memories you have. The wins and the losses, they all take care of themselves, but the relationships that you make, I think, is something that you will always remember.
You can't really even put it into words what it was like. Just here we were unknown. No one knew who we were. We were a bunch of unknown guys. We made some goals, and it all worked. That just never happens. It was so incredible. I mean, words can't really describe it.
BYU and football, it's a big extended family.
Everything about my life has been because of my Heavenly Father and trying to do the things that He's blessed me with. I just felt that was important in my life. I made sure my kids realize that this is things you don't do or you do, and always stay active in the church and you'll always be happy, keep the commandments that you've been taught. If I wouldn't have went on a mission, I would have missed the national championship year. So I believe Heavenly Father put me where I was supposed to be.
We just loved each other. And we weren't going to lose. I look at it now and I look at what it did for the church. And again, if you're not religious, that's okay. But I'm going to share with you my heart. And my heart is that this was something that we were supposed to be there at that time.
Lavelle, I don't know how he managed all of us knuckleheads, honestly. And Norm did too. But you know what? We were there for a reason and a purpose. And we all fulfilled it. I mean, it was really an enjoyable deal. And you know what? You don't forget people. And you love each other.
With Lavelle, it was being able to hire great people, be a steady, calming influence on the program, never too high, never too low. We never panic, never get too emotional either way. And that really provided a stability, an emotional stability for the football team. We played like that on the field on Saturdays. We never flinched. We just believed that we were going to win week in and week out. It was a pretty good experience.
I might have been the last player that got to speak to him before he passed away. He always treated me well, treated me fair, and I loved him. He did a great job at BYU. He turned that program around, and we was nationally ranked for many, many years, so a lot of respect for Lavelle.
The winning of the championships must be acknowledged and must be respected, because that is so hard to do, especially with the consistency with which Lavelle did it. But that's not what the real legacy is. When I went into the museum on campus in the football complex, when it was first built, I saw a former player standing in front of a trophy case with the national championship trophy and other trophies. And he had his kids with him. He was showing them what he did. And it dawned on me, standing behind them watching that occur, that the real trophies weren't the ones in the glass. The real success, the real triumph, was represented by that father with his kids, who have a different kind of father than they ever would have had it not been for Lavelle Edwards and the assistant coaches that he brought in to develop not just football players, but to develop men, and the wives that have a husband who is a far better husband, a far better man than he ever could have been had it not been for the influence of Lavelle and the assistant coaches that he surrounded us with. And as I saw that former player with his kids pointing to the trophies that he won, my thought was, you know what? You are actually the representation of the success of Lavelle Edwards.
I just know that I enjoyed that journey of BYU. Those 5 years were an amazing 5 years, and very historic. It's just never going to be forgotten to have won the national championship, to have that kind of camaraderie.
I don't know if you know the stat, but from this point forward, backward for 50 years, BYU is number 8 in the country in total number of wins in the last 50 years. But winning a national championship kind of it put a polish, buffed up this thing for a while, and then they kept it going. We'll always talk about that 84 championship.
84 was like a confirmation that, to me, that God's got me. He's creating all these great blessings for me. I have no idea what's going to happen. It was testimony strengthening my whole experience at BYU.
When we get back together, it's really not about, hey, remember in the fourth quarter of the San Diego State game and you made that great play? Like, it's never that. It's always just about practice and the coaches and our relationships and funny stories and getting on buses and being afraid of this coach or making fun of that coach in a good-natured way, or all those crazy stories of how we grew up together. And that, to me, was what I take away of when what's shaped my life was being part of a really, really special team unit of outstanding individuals that were a part of my life. And it was really sad to see it end. No matter how great the prize was, the journey was better than the prize.
Thank you for listening to Legends of 84. This podcast series was produced by Eric Michael Robertson and Scott Christofferson, with Bree Ray Alpew as associate producer. Music by Stuart Maxfield and Eric Michael Robertson. Legends of 84 is a production of BYU Radio.